All right, everyone, would like to welcome in Drew and Mike to our Monday NBA podcast here on the TakeCast. We are going around the league as we do every single Monday, just kind of if you spent the whole weekend watching football, getting all caught up on that, here is your gentle reminder back to your week of grinding NBA. So, Drew, the first thing that I have to ask you about, how do you feel about your arch nemesis, Carmelo Anthony, starting power forward for the Portland Trailblazers?
So did we record last week and I had no idea?
He had like literally just signed like hours before we recorded.
I think we recorded and then after you were like, oh, people are going to play Carmelo in DFS. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because I was away for the weekend at a wedding and I wasn't tuned in. And my mentions didn't blow up with Carmelo news. I'm like kind of disappointed in my followers because for years, anything that was Carmelo related would find its way into my mentions. I mean, good for him. Like he gets another chance to, you know, hoist up some shots. But like, if you think that he is going to make your basketball team better at this point, I don't know what to tell you. There's probably, you know, there's probably a decent handful of dudes around the league that are like on the end of rosters or G League types that, are going to make your team a little bit better just because they won't jack up inefficient shots and not try on defense. Shout out to the Blazers for getting worse.
Love to see it.
Yeah, they're so – I mean, they lost to freaking Cleveland over the weekend with Dame back without Kevin Love.
Right?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's bad. Like, Tristan Thompson just gashed him inside. They have no resistance on the in their interior defense. You know, Melo got smashed earlier in the week on defense. Like, obviously, missing Whiteside is part of the factor too. Who's probably back tonight? But he's just useless out there on defense. Like you said, he's taking bad shots. He's not shooting the ball well, really anywhere. I think he's actually shot well in the corners, I guess, or something. But other than that, like he's shooting like I just pulled a shot chart a minute ago. Yeah, he's shooting 50% at the rim. He's 30% on mid ranges. Those are 30% of his shots too. So he's still taking too many of those. Like, yeah. His guarantee date is, I think, the 7th of January. Is he going to make that? Like, I don't think so.
No, yeah. He shouldn't.
Yeah.
But
they're so thin on that position though.
Yeah. They need rim
protection. Anthony Tolliver started two games for them at center over the last week. Anthony Tolliver
roasted. Thompson just killed him.
Yeah, I mean he's not a center.
Yeah.
He's not. I mean, like when he came into the league, he was like a 3-4. Now he's a clear 4, and now they're asking him to play center. Like that's a tough ask for that dude. Like, yeah. 80% Scal played of his well. Matchups are going to be bad.
Scal played well on Thursday. I think he like 17x or something.
Yeah.
And then
dusted everybody when he was chalky on.
That's like a total Scal Labissiere thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to make some changes, man. Like Pau Gasol basically let them cut him so they could add somebody. And I mean, this Whiteside hip thing, he had three different hip issues last year and it's hurt again now. So like this is going to be an issue, I think, all season. So like, they need to find another big man. Like losing, we talked about this when Collins went down.
How is it possible that you're not able to find a backup center? Isn't that like the number one easiest thing to find in the NBA?
It's not hard to find, but you have to understand that their situation, when they had that one off season where they went nutty spending on everybody with like the Allen Crabbe deal and was that when they paid Aminu as well?
Yeah, Aminu.
Yeah.
Aminu wasn't too expensive.
And then Aminu wasn't too bad, but Turner, that was the other one.
Yeah.
They just got their roster in a position where they had to then spend the next few years like getting rid of those contracts and giving up picks to do it and whatnot and giving up younger players to do it. And then they were like, oh crap, we got to the Western Conference Finals last year. We have to find a way to try to hold on to being competitive. And so then they like go out and just thrash any roster depth that they have and get like Whiteside to like try to cover up for the Nurkic injury. And they're just a disaster.
Yeah. I guess when you put it that way, it's more like not a backup center. It's like they would be trying to find a fourth string center.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with them is basically like they made one bad offseason of moves and then have been trying to dig themselves out of that hole. And the only way to dig yourselves out of that hole through transactions to keep you competitive is to push that hole off further. And now it's all fallen out from underneath them because they just don't have the depth to withstand any of these injuries.
Yeah, like Moses Brown is not, he's not NBA ready yet. Like, he's a pretty talented dude, but and then also like Melo's cutting into like Nazir Little, who was playing well. They didn't run Simons out there at all. Like with the three guard lineups, they cut his minutes hardcore. I think like 14 minutes or something on Saturday. So like that's hurting his development. Just makes no sense to have Melo on that roster, man, for their strengths and weaknesses and just the way that their season looks like it's going to shake out. Like they're no chance to make the playoffs, right? Like they're terrible right now.
No, they're so far away from that. Which also underscores how good Nurkic was last year.
Yeah,
he was really incredible. And you know, I was, because I liked Jokic from, you know, from the start in Denver, I was always like, I thought Nurkic was really good too. But
no, you were a Nurk hater, bro.
No, I was a Nurk hater because I didn't think he was better than Jokic, and he was taking playing time from Jokic. But I way back when I was tweeting when Nurkic was like shaking at Boogie after like pinging a jumper right in his face. Like, I like Nurkic's game quite a bit. It just didn't make sense to play the two of them together, and it didn't make sense to play Nurkic out of Jokic. But Nurk like really took it to a different level last year in Portland. He was incredible. And you know, that injury just changed the course of this year for them in a big, big way.
Yeah, that started the season when Denver, when Nurk was taking all Jokic's minutes, was like one of the most tilting times ever, like of like writing about basketball. Like it was so hard, and just constant Twitter mentions like, "Oh, what's going on with Jokic?" Like it was like, "What's going on with Jokic?" was like the number one thing for like a month.
Yeah,
like and you know, he's just a slow starter too, so hopefully he's picking it up. Bad game yesterday, but still won.
Hard for him to get in shape after an off season of you know, playing Call of Duty and drinking Coke. And you know what? Who amongst us, right? Who amongst us cannot cast that stone? So a player that the Blazers probably wish they still had. They probably wish they had Enes Kanter right now to take some of that scoring load off of Dame and CJ. He plays for the Boston Celtics, who are going through their own mini injury crisis, except it's not really a crisis, Drew, because Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, and Jaylen Brown, they are answering the call. These dudes are just crushing.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of the opposite of Portland in the sense that, you know, they had so much abundance in assets the last few years that they've been able to keep kind of stockpiling the roster with the end of bench players that are pretty good players and like NBA ready. So they still are able to, you know, withstand some of these injury situations because they have guys who can kind of go out there and fill roles. And they have so many guys that are like Swiss Army knives and they can play different positions and do different things that they've been able to get by. I think I'm surprised at the start that they've had in terms of how strong a start they've gone off to. And it's not even like it's schedule related or anything like that. Certainly they had like a few easier games, but they played really well in that game against the Clippers. They have a win against Toronto. Like they've done really, really well. Obviously the Kemba, I didn't see the Kemba injury. I was out on, I guess that was
Friday. It was scary.
Night? Friday.
Yeah, that was Friday night. I was out, so I didn't see the injury. And then the way people were tweeting about it, I didn't want to see it.
Dude, yeah.
So I abstained, but I saw that like he's doubtful, but like doubtful as a tag is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's going to be a relatively lesser injury than people were first concerned about. But yeah, they just have a lot of good players and they play hard and they're back to like the Celtics of 2 years ago where they just seem to overperform their talent on the roster because they give you all their effort every night. It's kind of like the Derrick Rose Bulls teams before Derrick Rose became like MVP level Derrick Rose, where they were a team that was going to play hard every single night. And on that alone, they were going to win like 10 extra games a year. Because they're going to get teams that are just dead tired or not into it that night or whatever, and they're just going to win like 10 games based on them putting in more effort than their opponents. And that's what Boston feels like. That's what Miami feels like, those two teams in terms of this year.
Yeah, when that happened on Friday night, dude, I was working on Roto-World Borbs, and I had it right up. I cut my head down for like a solid like 15 seconds, just like, oh, God, like I can't even write. It was so terrifying. But, yeah, like you said, it's good news that he's even just doubtful. Like that Brad, like after the game, like Brad Stevens was saying how he talked to him in the ambulance and all this and that. So it's like, oh, phew. So it's not like, you know, very, very scary stuff. But yeah, so like I guess regarding that, one player who really stepped up is Brad Wanamaker. He actually led the team in second half minutes. They made a really big run. They were they had like a 17-point comeback, almost pulled it out in Denver. Like in that spot when Kemba going down, like for that was just, you know, total gritty kind of comeback. Almost had the dub, but yeah, I think they love Brad Wanamaker. Like I was watching the post game coverage on the Celtics broadcast, and they were talking about how they really expect him to step forward, and he's become like kind of a leader.
30-year-old Brad Wanamaker.
What's up?
30-year-old.
I would have lost that bet. I bet 23. Like you just he. How long has he been the Celtics backup point guard?
Oh, he's only been not even 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, is he like a did he play over in Europe, like in the Greek league or something?
I forget where.
I will look. So.
Yeah.
I will look this up while Dink projects. First of all, this is a real question. Do you think that the Celtics can win the NBA championship? I posit that they can with this roster.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they're quite in that. I think they're like the clear third best team in the East. I think that's kind of where they're at. Like with obviously,
I think that they are the best team in the East.
Really, I don't know. I just don't buy them in a long series. Like if Embiid's healthy and
I guess
healthy again.
So the two things you would say is, one, Kemba Walker not going to be as good at getting his own shot, and he is like a real, real defensive liability. And then two, their interior defense, unless your boy Gallagher, unless Time Lord turns into someone you can play 32 minutes a night, who's not going to get in foul trouble, and who is going to, you know, be like, because he's a good defender, but he's like a good defender kind of how some of these guys who hunt blocks are good defenders, in the sense that he can get out of position and he does foul. But like if Time Lord is a top 15 NBA center, yeah, I think that they can win an NBA championship. And I would controversially say I think that at full health, they're better than the Bucks. It would be the Sixers that I would be more worried about than the Bucks.
I mean, Giannis is just – head. By the way, make your free.
I mean, Giannis is the best player. Giannis is the best player in the league. I think that this Bucks roster is not great.
Yeah, Bledsoe's playing better. Props to him for when Middleton went down. He's really stepped it up. But yeah, like we're gonna find out how, you know. We know Brad Stevens. He just loves the matchups. So he even started Semi Ojeleye in the third quarter after Kemba went down, which was a surprise. I would assume it was going to be Wanamaker, but sounds like they're going to let Marcus Smart and kind of Jaylen Brown and Tatum obviously handle the ball a little bit more. So I would probably expect those guys to have some big games. They get the Kings tonight, so they should really put up some big lines. I mean, all three of those guys should be pretty popular in DFS plays, assuming Kemba can't go. But and then also Daniel Theis is questionable. So we could maybe see some extra Time Lord there. And yeah, I mean, that game against the Spurs that, like, what, three Saturdays ago or whatever it was, like, that was just unbelievably good game from Time Lord. Like, he's not just a stats guy. He can actually be a really good player. So, yeah, if Theis is not there tonight, like, oh, man, Time Lord, I'm be so pumped for that. But,
I was also going to say, like, you're talking about Time Lord defensively. Theis has been one of the best defenders in the league this year. He's been incredible defensively. Now I think certain matchups he's going to get sized out of because he's not a natural center. And that's where I think the matchup with Philadelphia in a series becomes very challenging for the Celtics in a way that it hadn't been in the past. And I think we're kind of seeing why it was so good for the Celtics in the past with the early season play of Aaron Baines in Phoenix before he got hurt. You know, that guy is a really, really good defender. And obviously, you know, he does a lot of the little dirty stuff too with, you know, setting picks and taking charges and different things like that. But he gave Embiid a decent bit of a challenge as much as Horford did. And they had two guys to rotate on. I don't think the Celtics have that this year. I don't think they have paths to slowing down Embiid. And that's why I think that they're clearly behind Philadelphia. Milwaukee, I think they match up much, much better with. But ultimately, I think, you know, they're going to need all their wings healthy. Brown, Hayward, Tatum, Smart to throw at Giannis and Middleton and Bledsoe. It's definitely not as good of a Bucks team as last year, but I think I'd still take Milwaukee slightly ahead of Boston, but I'd take Philadelphia clearly ahead of both of those teams in a playoff series. I think Philadelphia is going to be a sluggish team throughout the regular season because that's just going to be the way that Philadelphia goes. But if they're fully healthy and had to play a 7-game series right now, they're the team that I take.
Well, there we go. There we have the definitive answer on the Boston Celtics. And what people have to realize is 97% of my consumption of basketball stuff is going to come from Zach Lowe or from Bill Simmons. And those dudes are I mean, Simmons doesn't even try and hide it, but Lowe is also very high on the Boston Celtics. So that stuff creeps in for me.
Lowe is the guy who nailed the Heat more than anybody else in the preseason. So I mean, true. Zach's. You
know, he's a mega mind. Yeah, he's super
the
sharp.
The best Dartmouth grad giving NBA analysis out there.
Yeah, ESPN's. They took my bandwagon line. Like that was my thing over the summer, and they had this whole like little bandwagon thing. Like, oh man. Oh, well, at least bandwagon's mainstream now. So I feel kind of cool. Hipster Gallagher coming out. But just quickly on Tatum, 26 points per 36 without Kemba on the floor this season. In 162-minute sample. And then, like I said, Brad Wanamaker as well. So if you listen to this pod and playing some DFS, those are two guys to probably look at tonight.
So another guy that I wanted to talk about is Kyrie Irving. Are we starting to get concerned about this shoulder injury, Mike? Like, he is now to an age in the NBA where, like, Kyrie Irving is not young. Like, he is a veteran in the NBA. Is this something that we could see nagging him for the rest of the year?
I mean, yeah, he's injury prone, man. Like, I hate to call dudes that, but that's the way it is. Like, before last year, he was actually healthy. He was missing like 25 games a year. So him missing time really isn't surprising. He was playing through it at first, and he had the kinesio tape on his shoulder and everything. But yeah, they said he can't really play through stuff. He's going to miss, tonight and two more on top of that. So yeah, a little bit concerning, but they're actually playing pretty well. Kind of when they were actually not playing well. They had a three-game losing streak when Kyrie was out there, and then now they're playing better because Spencer Dinwiddie, I think he only had three games with 20-plus points, and now he's done it five straight times, you know, prior to this hot stretch now. So he's really stepped it up. Joe Harris has been great. Jared Allen's playing better. DeAndre Jordan's playing better. Tareen Prince has been a great fit. You know, a lot of concerns if he can play the four. Turns out he's been pretty solid there in a lot of matchups. Has sadly pushed Nick Claxton kind of out. Which I'm sad about. I want to see some more Nick Claxton. But, yeah, I mean, the Nets are, you know, kind of better than we thought, I guess, because we would probably assume that, especially with Lone LeVert as well, that they were going to really fade. But, you know, three-game winning streak, they've been just great overall. Like we last time we potted, we talked about that game against the Bulls when we thought that they were, you know, overperforming. My dog scratching himself. yeah, he's got the cone of shame on right now. Brody, stop it.
Tough scene, man. Yeah, we've all been there.
He's got some dog bit him, and he's got all cut up, so he's got a cone on right now. But, yeah, so, yeah, I think they're going to be pretty good. But, yeah, Dinwiddie's been just tremendous. We knew he would be, too.
Dinwiddie has been crazy. Like, he's, like, getting up to, like, mid-sevens on DK, and you're like, oh, my gosh, like, lock. Like, you're like, this dude's never getting less than 40.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
We should go back to the wonderful transactions in Bulls point guard history where they waived Spencer Dinwiddie, had him under contract, waived him, and then later that season acquired Campaign by trading Taj Gibson and second round picks to Oklahoma City. That's the Bulls evaluating the point guard position so well.
They're so sharp, dude.
Just had Spencer Dinwiddie on the roster. I will also say, as the resident Kyrie hater, as much as it has brought me nothing but joy to see the Nets winning games in the absence of Kyrie, the schedule has been quite friendly. Bulls, blowout loss to the Pacers, Hornets, Kings, both at home and then at the Knicks. And now they play at the Cavs tonight. Not a particularly challenging schedule to get through without Kyrie. And they had just come off a West Coast trip, which is always difficult for those East Coast teams. So I think some of this is just also schedule related in terms of the schedule lightening up for them. But Dinwiddie's awesome. He's a really good player. I think he's one of the more underrated players in the league. Pretty cool dude also with the stuff that he's trying to do in terms
he's on the right wave. Dinwiddie's a Bitcoin boy.
Yeah, trying to like blockchain out his contract and whatnot. Like pretty interesting dude. So a guy that I'm always happy to root for and see him get opportunities. I think that situation in Brooklyn, you know, he was one of the first people to start to like turn that program around. And then obviously, like, you know, they made the move in the offseason to bring in Kyrie, and that was just naturally going to push him down the priority list. And he seemed to have no problem with it. It was playing well off the bench in that role beforehand. So just seems like a really good dude, and seems like a good teammate, and obviously a very good basketball player. So I like whenever he's getting his opportunity and he can put on all his talents on display.
Mike, who is the most surprising fantasy player for you this season?
I hate to be lame, I guess, but I mean, it has to be Luka, right? Like,
you are right in the sense that I don't think that anyone was touting him for MVP, second highest DraftKings points per game. Like, yeah. People thought he was great, but people did not think that he was like gonna drag the Mavs to the playoffs this year. Great.
Yeah, like their offense is just insane right now. They're on better pace than any of the Warriors dynasty offensive ratings with how well they're playing. Like, we knew Luka was going to be great, no question, but we thought it'd be like, you know, he'd be here. You know, he's like 2 years early to being like amazing MVP Luka. So, it's either him or I think Brandon Ingram. Maybe for season long, you would probably say Jonathan Isaac just because the defensive stats are more valuable there too. But, I mean, Luka is just like – beyond incredible for how well he's played, and we talk about him a lot, so it's just crazy how good he is.
What about you, Drew?
Those names, so Isaac was one of the names I came like from. When you think about fantasy, I think of, you know, steals and blocks and the ability to kind of move categories by yourself, and Isaac's done that with good percentages and hitting a few threes. And if you're playing like nine cat leagues, he never turns the ball over as well, so he's stupid valuable. Luka's emergence is awesome and been really fun to watch. I would say also Montrezl Harrell has been
great.
Not a surprise in the sense that like we know he's always been a really effective like permanent player, but he worked on his conditioning in the offseason. He's averaged 30 minutes a game this year and has been able to play into those mid 30s from time to time. That's really kind of catapulted his value. I would say just kind of looking through some of the like seasonal ranks for nine cats now, Brooke Lopez has had quietly a really, really good season once again after last year kind of being like a mid-round pick that you got. Like, him and JaVale McGee like were the foundation of Leonie and I's NFBKC team last year that made a little bit of a run. But Ingram is the guy to me that like his game is just taking to a whole new level, and you know, it really makes you think about what's been going on with the Lakers over the last decade when you see this isn't the first guy that's left Los Angeles and really seen their game take to a whole new level. Like, you think through the last few years, you know, Brooke Lopez was like banished there and then immediately went to Milwaukee and was like good again and useful. And it was the same year that they needed to use like JaVale as a starting center, which can only be used for so much. And then Dar, you know, was kind of cast off there, obviously the Nick Young video stuff. And then Ingram now. And so like, it's clear that the Lakers have just not gotten enough out of their talent when they've been there with them. And then this year they bring in all the veterans, the guys who are like kind of fully polished and they're playing well again. But it kind of speaks to the challenges that the Lakers have had over the last decade in terms of developing their own stars.
I'll add too. Ingram in the second half has been unbelievably good. 68 true shooting on 30.4 usage rate in the second half this year. Just like takes over games, man. We never knew he was talented to get the Kevin Durant comparisons, but like seriously, like he's playing a lot like Durant. Like, been really good on pull ups, been really good at getting in the lane. Just such growth from him that
I'm really interested to see what it looks like with him and Zion playing alongside, because Zion's going to need the ball in his hands, and Ingram has, you know, he shot the ball well enough that he can certainly take the ball out of his hands. But what we've seen so far early in the season is Ingram with the ball in his hands a lot and Drew kind of deferring a little bit. And I think Drew has always been kind of willing to do that and been kind of comfortable being the second option. So I don't have any concerns about Drew, but it will be interesting to see Ingram after playing, you know, so much on ball during the early part of the season, if that changes. But they can run out some really fun, athletic, up and down the court lineups with, you know, Zion at center type situations in smaller ball lineups and Ingram at the four. That would be really, really fun offensively. It sounds like we're still like a month away or so on Zion, but I'm really interested to see how those two share the floor together.
And Kenrich Williams, just real quick, he's been really good.
He's a great glue guy.
Yep. I love Kenrich, so Yeah, kind of went a little tangent there, but go sneak some Pelicans. Always good to sneak those in.
Yeah.
And Drew Holiday's back, baby. Didn't play well yesterday, but all the, oh my God, Ingram's killing Drew thing. He does kind of, like you said, kind of defer late in the game just because Ingram's been so good in the second half. But this guy, he's just so good getting in the lane, like at will. Great defense. Just, they missed the steal on him. I thought he would have had a 5-steal game. He had, like, they gave it to Alonzo. I was like, I thought that was true. But anyways, yeah. So, like, just quick. Are the Pelicans going to make the playoffs? Like, I know they're not playing well right now, but like we said, like, really after those big five teams in the West, they're kind of in that hunt to, you know, be a 7 or 8 seed, I think, right?
They are not going to make the playoffs, I don't think. Seems like they're probably not going to. Drew, do you think differently?
You there?
I am. It seems like...
All right, so, yeah, I mean, their schedule is a little bit softer. Like, we kind of knew their first month of the season was going to be tough with a lot of road games and this and that. But it does soften up a little bit. You know, they get OKC for a couple games. So, I think they got a shot. You know, they have to start winning games now. But they are playing better. They almost had that game against Utah. They almost won that. They obviously didn't play very well on a back-to-back against the Clippers. But that's fine. I mean, it's almost a schedule loss. But, yeah, I think they're kind of in the hunt.
Yeah, I think that it is. I think that it is not unreasonable. I think that it is unlikely. And every game that Zion misses, it's harder and harder for them to make it. And, I mean, even outside of Zion getting injured, they've just had bad luck overall with injuries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Drew missed in the first part. Ingram missed a good week. Derek Favors, too bad he's hurt again. So yeah, but yeah, they've been able to have some guys step up. I mentioned Kenridge being huge. JJ Redick's been really good lately, and even Lonzo played pretty well lately too. I think he's going to be a good fit. I like him in that backup role. You know, playing 25-26 minutes should be a pretty good spot for him.
Yeah. So Drew's internet in his fancy new building in New York just cut out. So Mike and I are going to the last thing that I wanted to talk about anyways, I didn't want us to have to run a marathon here, is I wanted to run through the Philadelphia 76ers with you, because to me, they seem like a team that should be better than they are. Am I wrong on that? They are their fifth in the East right now. Granted, there are four teams tied at 11 wins. Where are you at on the 76ers? Are you disappointed in Ben Simmons? Are you disappointed in Brett Brown? Are you disappointed in Embiid? Where are you at with the 76ers?
I mean, I think they're pretty good. You know, you mentioned they're not playing all that great. They had a big win against Miami on Saturday. But, I mean, when that starting unit is together, they're great. They have a plus 29.4 net rating in 81 minutes together, talking about the Simmons, Richardson, Tobias, Horford, and Embiid lineup. Embiid playing in back-to-back, I thought that was a big positive. I'm definitely buying the Sixers. I mean, Embiid's been just huge impact on the defensive end. Just really a matter of them staying healthy. Obviously, the whole Ben Simmons shooting threes thing was not really going to happen, although he has one now. I'm buying, like you said. Sounds like you're down on him, down on them. I mean, Dink said he
well, was. I would say I'm not down on them in terms of the talent on their roster. I am down on them in terms of how they have performed this season. Like, you know, yeah. they're not shooting particularly well. They are not scoring particularly well. Like, in terms of net rating, they are only the eighth best team in the NBA. I expected them to be better than the Heat, better than the Celtics, definitely better than the Raptors, and they just haven't been thus far. And that doesn't mean that these things are not fixable, but I also am a guy, like, I really believed in Ben Simmons. I thought he was going to be one of those guys who, you know, added something into his game every year in the offseason, and it just hasn't really happened. Like Ben Simmons, what is different about his game this year versus his game as a rookie?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. Like, he's going to get – they try to change him where he's not in the dunker spot as much and kind of comes off screens differently, more downhill style. So, yeah, he's better in that regard. But, yeah, he's never going to be, like, a knockdown shooter. Like, we kind of know that, but that's fine. And, like, it's not – like, yeah, they're in fifth, but, I mean, they're playing, like, just under 700 winning percentage basketball. So it's really – more about the Heat and Raptors playing really well than the
maybe I'm tilting the wrong thing.
Yeah, so I think it's more about, like, how, I mean, they just destroyed the Heat, and I thought they were going to kill the Spurs by like 25 because the Spurs shrink the floor on offense and the Sixers, you know, shrink the floor on defense. So I was like, how are these guys going to score? And yeah, the whole Spurs thing is just another topic probably worth talking about, but,
go for it. I've heard a couple of the big podcasts. So like, you know, Dunked On and Zach Lowe and stuff, they have all talked over this last week about the Spurs. And so I have a couple of thoughts if you want to go first.
Yeah. I mean, like DeJounte has been not great. Like I'm a big DeJounte guy. I think he has like a minus 20 net rating in the first half. You know, and they won their game without him. So, like, when they snapped that 8-game losing streak on Saturday, I believe. So, yeah, against the Knicks. And they almost blew that game. They were up, like, 25 or something early and almost blew it, man. That was crazy. But I don't think they're making the playoffs, man. Like, this team just does not have a good offensive rhythm. No real reliable guys to like create points off after LaMarcus and DeRozan. Like they need more help to get those guys open and not getting as much tough shots. Aldridge's usage rate's way down this year. I think it's like 4% down. He's been pretty good. I'd be panicking if I'm a Spurs fan.
So let's think about this. What would be their way out of it, right? Like how would they get better? And I think the answer would be Rudy Gay playing at the four more often and LMA playing at the five, yeah. I guess. And one thing that was really interesting that was mentioned on the Zach Lowe podcast was their coaching staff doesn't ask players to do things that they are uncomfortable with. But I think that what they should do is they gotta make DeMar shoot threes. That is the simplest answer, right?
He can't though. You know, like
what does he shoot from three for his career? I'm going to go look this up right now.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't, they tried like the first 2-3 months of the season last year, he was taking them. And then after the break, he just totally dropped it and he's dropping it this year. So, if he shoots like 30%, that's still, you know, on par with what he would do normally. So,
right. So his last year in Toronto, he played 80 games. He shot 31% and he shot 3.6 threes per game. I would take that right now. If I was a Spurs decision maker, I would take 3.5 attempts per game at 30% over what he's doing right now.
Yeah. I'm not sure like why he's so against it. Like, you know, it's just cause it's such a better quality of shot and more efficient and everything. We know this, but like, does he just care about, like, so maybe some guys just care about their field goal percentage, which is, you know, obviously overrated with so many threes now. It's just, like, a useless stat. I'm with you. Like, he definitely needs to at least try it again.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Do you have anyone else that you are wanting to discuss? Let's do it.
A little about Vooch. Yeah, so no Vooch. They played pretty well on Saturday without him. Partly because Jonathan Isaac went off for a career high, which we talked about earlier. Like he's just so good right now. And it's just crazy how he's gone from a guy who really couldn't score at all to a guy who's like efficient now. I looked it up over the weekend. Like his true shooting has gone from like 46% as a rookie to I think 53% last year. And now he's over 60 in this young season. So yeah, 47, 54, and then 61 if you round up. Like increases in usage rate. You know, he's rebounding extremely well right now for his size. And that was really the big storyline of the offseason was just his growth. He just looks like a monster. Terrence Ross had the great quote that he moves like a lion and, you know, in like a giraffe's body for how big he is and how fast he is. So he's going to be big time. His splits without Vooch on the floor are really good. Part of that's a little bit weighted because he played so well on Saturday. But yeah, I think we're going to see more of him. Markelle Fultz played really well on Saturday as well. So I think we're going to get to see him kind of in tandem with Isaac on pick and rolls and stuff. I think that could be really fun to watch. Evan Fournier had a big game. He actually shot the ball terribly over the past couple years without Vooch on the floor. So I think that was kind of a false positive. And then Ken Birch is going to continue to start. Mo Bamba, his minutes actually went way up. He hadn't played more than 16 minutes because they were worried about, kind of load management on his stress fracture to his leg from last year, the end of the season. So he's playing more. So it's going to be probably close to like a 27-21 split. So that's pretty valuable for Bamba, who could block some shots. Right. And really do some things. So I think he's going to be pretty sneaky in DFS, especially in certain matchups. Maybe if it's like, you know, if Birch is going against someone, like actually tonight against Andre Drummond, like maybe Birch gets into foul trouble and then Bamba gets a little bit of a longer leash. So yeah, he's going to be pretty fun. And then Terrence Ross, obviously going to get more minutes. We saw Wes Iwundu start for Aaron Gordon, but like, is Aaron Gordon going to get traded now? Just cause like Isaac has just hit a whole nother level.
Do you think they should?
Yeah. I mean, Aaron Gordon, as much as he wants to be a three, like he's kind of not. I think it's Isaac is just totally, totally dusted him to make him, you know, he's like, he's their best player. Like you could say Vooch is their best player too, I guess, but Isaac, and we knew this too, like his upside is just so high for steals and blocks. And, you know, he's shooting threes. He's getting to the rim a lot more this year, you know, on his own and using his teammates as well. So yeah, it's going to be really fun to see how great Isaac can be without Vooch on the floor to take, you know, mid 20s usage rate in, you know, 30 minutes per game. So, and he has, I think, 13 minutes as a center, and he has like 5 blocks in those 13 minutes. Like, so yeah, he's going to be just so fun. I'm going to really enjoy this while Vooch is out for anywhere from 7 to 10 days to up to 4 weeks, according to Shams' report as well. So, I'm curious to see how they handle it without Vooch and Gordon maybe for a little bit.
Wow, Drew, thanks for joining us, buddy.
I'm back. All right. Sorry. The wonderful internet situation here in New York.
It's okay. You got me inspired to actually actually pay my Zoom.us bill for the month. So
thought they were kicking us out.
Yeah. They were gonna kick us out, and then I just decided to vamp for a little bit. You know how that goes. We're talking about the Orlando Magic without Nikola Vucevic.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is so apparent is kind of the mismanagement of assets that Orlando has had the last few years in terms of, and I think, you know, in general, I think they've kind of drafted the best player available, which I think is the correct approach, but I think they should have been looking to try to sell Gordon or Vucevic almost immediately upon drafting Isaac, and then following that up with Bamba was just like galaxy brain situation. And I think what you're going to see is you're going to see Isaac really thrive in this situation over the course of the next few games while both of these guys are out. And I think you'll see, I don't know. Like, I feel like they should have gotten in on Portland's need for bigs. Like yeah. they should have been looking to try to take whatever Portland still had. And maybe there's still something that they could figure out. I don't know. I don't know if there's like a McCollum for like Vooch and Gordon type situation.
Here's the thing though, you're violating a key rule of the NBA, which is that at all times the Magic must have 0 point guards and 4 point guards. And if that rule is ever violated, the league stops functioning.
Hey, they got Fultz for cheap, man. I mean, we got to give them some credit there, right?
They did on that front, but just the front court stuff, like they just need to clear out some of and get assets for it. And and like the extension of Vooch, which was at like a fine number, if I remember correctly, isn't something that's going to necessarily harm them substantially. And obviously they can bring Bamba along slowly because of the stress fracture and whatnot, but like they need to sort this roster out. And like a year and a half ago, Aaron Gordon, I think, would have been extremely coveted. And I don't know if they're, and I still think a smart team should be somewhat interested in Gordon, because I think Gordon could be like a Sean Marion type if he commits himself to that type of role. But I think they've lost a little bit of a window to extract value. And like, I think Isaac is the most exciting thing Orlando's had as a prospect in a while. Like,
Penny?
He's a really, really exciting prospect. I mean, the way, like size-wise, he's just a monster out there with both length and with quickness and athleticism. And I think, you know, he's shown a little bit with the handle this year that's improved. He's shooting the ball well. Like, he to me looks like he, like his best case scenario upside would be like some sort of Paul George monster at the four, which would just be insane. I think they need to do everything that they can to start to build around this guy and like start to work the offense in that way so that it allows him to kind of develop all these different skill sets.
He's like kind of like a Marion kind of a guy too.
He is, but I think he has more, I think he has more tools in the toolbox offensively because yeah. his handle right now is not terrible. And so I think he's got in, if he can just work on the handle a little bit more, he's going to naturally create so much length and separation from defenders because of how long he is that, his shooting touch is reasonable. Like I think the sky is really the ceiling for him. Like Aaron Gordon just is never going to have like the length advantages of Isaac, or he's never going, like he can jump out of the gym, but he's also not a consistent shooter. So like Marion had to work really hard at just like kind of being that guy who is just like lock it in defensively and then make corner threes. And I kind of think that's what Gordon needs to turn his game into. And he'd be really, really valuable. But I think there were hopes that Gordon could take it much further than that. I think statistically right now you're correct in that Isaac's game is very Sean Marion-esque, but I think the ceiling on Isaac is way, way higher.
Yep. Oh, I mean, the block shots are – like Marion was always solid in blocks. Like Isaac has, you know, league-winning blocks and league-leading blocks too. Like he's just – he's so bouncy. He just like – I think one of the best things about Marion was like his second jumps were just so good. And kind of Isaac has that similar thing where he just like he's automatically on you, like even after he like missed on a block or whatever. Like
yeah,
just,
with Isaac, I feel like there's enough handle there that with further skill set honing of it, that like I really do think he can be like a guy that can end up being like an ISO scorer as well. Yeah. Like I think he's got that in him. Where I don't think Aaron Gordon has that in him. I don't think like those guys. You know, you can go to them in a pinch. If they have the right matchup defensively, but like Isaac has so much skill and I think he has enough of a handle that he can eventually hone it to the point where he can be a guy that can be like a KD or a Paul George, where you can just give him the ball late in the shot clock and he can get you a pretty darn good shot.
Yeah, he really grew from like one dribble scoring to like two, three dribble scoring.
Exactly.
This year. So yeah,
exactly.
If he could get to
and that, like four, that five, quickly six. Of an improvement is like a big sign to me.
Yeah.
That's like the stuff we had talked about with Bam, where like every time you checked in on Bam, like every 6 months, there was something new to his game that had been clearly worked on and developed. And I feel similarly with Jonathan Isaac.
All right. So I would like to be selfish and I would like to commandeer this conversation and tell me, is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going to be a top 15 NBA player while all of these Los Angeles Clippers picks are conveying to the Oklahoma City Basketball Thunder Club?
When are the years that they all convey?
Over like the next 4 years,
Will he be a top 15 player over the next four years, correct, Mike?
Yeah, it's like it's in the 2022, and it's a while, yeah.
So top 15 over the next 4 years, I would say that I would give him like a 0% chance in the next 2 years, maybe like 10% chance, like very little chance of a top 15 player in the next 2 years. But I think the back end of those 2 years, it's probably gets close to like 30 to 40% chance. And then I think when those picks are actually being impactful NBA players, you know, his second contract type situation, he's got a pretty decent chance. I think he has all the skill sets and the size and the components to do it. I think he's going to need to put on a little bit more weight on his frame. To be like a really, really consistent, efficient scorer. But the fact that he is able to already be like a pretty decent scorer right now with at age 21, I think bodes extremely well. So I would say like year three and year four, he's got a chance to be that. But I think it's more likely that he'll be like a top 30 player. And then I think the years that those picks are starting to make impacts on the roster, I think the timing will align pretty well.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. Top 15 is pretty high.
It's such a high.
Yeah, that's high.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
that is the only way that Oklahoma City comes back to being Oklahoma City again. They are useless until Shai becomes that guy, or one of these draft picks becomes that guy. They will be 35 to 40 wins a year, and they'll be hopeless.
I mean, Basie's been pretty good, too. I think he's kind of further along than we thought. But, yeah, Shai's been he's just grown so much just in half-court scoring. Like, he's unassisted 58% of the time. So, like, that's a pretty good number for him for how well – we knew this in the offseason. Like, he could really, you know, kind of create his own shot more than people were giving him credit for. So, I think if you said top 20, I think it sounds like Drew's with me. If you said top 25,
yeah, I'd be, exactly,
you know, more likely, but it's real tough to crack that top 15. Even like when he, and I think Shea could, like, so you said what, about 10% in like 3 or 4 years?
I'd say, so I think like there's 0 to 10% in the next 2 years. I think like 3 to 4 years, you start to probably get to like 15 to 25%, and then I would say like in the years that those draft picks are going to be start making an impact, like years 5-6 down the road on his second contract, I'd say then you start to get to like coin flip type situation.
Oh, okay. There. So I don't think coin flips. I think that's pretty high.
Yeah, like, I'm really high
even at any point in his career. And I love Shea's my guy, but like, I mean, I guess with, I don't know, who else? I'm trying to think of like. Like, is Isaac going to be top 15? I don't think so. But I think they're kind of in a similar
I think
role.
He could be. I think those guys could be. I think ultimately, yeah, like, with all these guys, like, I think when you're really excited about most guys in the league that are young players, you see a really clear path for them being, like, a top 30 player in the league. And then what really separates the guys who end up being the top 15... really big guys, really big jumps with their shooting. Like, that's the real big thing that, like, separates everybody. The guys who end up making the huge jumps with their shooting, like when Paul George kind of made that leap in terms of, like, his ability to create off the dribble and knock down shots, or Kawhi with his shooting, like, those guys made really, really big jumps.
Yeah, like, is he going to be better than Bradley Beal? Like, is Bradley Beal top 15 to you? I mean, like, I feel like he's kind of like,
I think Bradley Beal is a top 15 NBA player.
Yeah,
I love, he's borderline too,
so pretty close. He's, yeah,
range. Yeah,
and it's kind of where his peak would be. Like, I think Shea's, like, the best he could do would be Bradley Beal, which is still really good, but, like, yeah, I don't know. And he needs, I'm a little disappointed his steals haven't been that great this year. I was counting on that, but yeah, so it sounds like we're kind of all, we're all pretty much in agreement that, like, he has the potential, but it's going to take a lot to kind of work his way.
Yeah. All right, like, what boys. About
Don, like, is Donovan Mitchell a top 15 player? Like, I feel like that's a
no, because every time I play him on DraftKings.com, he gets between 28 and 35 DraftKings points as his hard cap. And then when I don't play him, he is ready to get after it. So for me, can't be a top 15 NBA player.
He's kind of played that way early in the season. He's been great, really, really good early in the season.
Yeah. All right, boys. Well, that's going to do it for us here on our Monday Drew Dinkmeyer internet-filled issue of the TakeCast. I hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving week. I'm not going to guarantee another episode of the show this week. I have a couple guests that I'm working on, but of course we are all busy over the rest week, so no guarantees on that, but we will for sure be back with this NBA show next week, and we will talk to you then.